reaching towards oblivion, unremitting, screaming, furious.
Thanks for tuning in. This has been an Experiment with Time on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. Have a great night, folks. Take care of yourselves.
Hey, y'all, what's up? It has been 37 days since Donald Trump took office, and a lot has been going on every single one of those 37 days. Yeah. And you could be feeling a lot of things about that, but more than anything, you might be feeling overwhelmed, but whatever you're feeling, I want you to know that you should never feel alone. So for the first 100 days, I'm going to be coming to you once a month with a general recap of how Americans are feeling with polls and data provided by Navigator Research. So these posts will also be nonpartisan. I'm just going to give you a lay of the land. I always think it's important for you to be able to inform your own opinions and make your own judgment calls. And what better way to do that than discussing the relevant data? So without further ado, let's get into it. Need my notes. So as we know, it is tax season. Yeah, and we've heard a lot of things, whether it's about Donald Trump trying to get rid of the IRS and create an ERS, whatever that means. But more than anything, what we've heard from the White House is messaging that we'll provide more tax cuts to the rich and create cuts to programs that our taxes would typically fund that would benefit the middle and lower classes. Here's what Americans are saying. Trump's alignment with tech CEOs is concerning. Most people, 90%, want tax cuts for the middle class instead. 69% of Americans believe tech CEOs are influencing Trump's administration, and it's seen across all racial groups, 68% in white folks, 66% black, 76% Hispanic, AAPI 77%, so it's not even that. 41% of Americans think Trump will help his billionaire friends get richer instead of helping the middle class. And 80% of Americans say CEOs, billionaires, and foreign investors should not get tax cuts. And speaking of his allegiance to tech billionaires, Elon Musk, his numbers are also dipping as far as favorability. As I'm sure you know, once Trump was put in office, he gave Elon Musk a new department or a Department of General Efficiency to which he was able to access Americans' private information, our Social Security, the Department of Education, Department of Treasury, and since has laid off several federal employees, and a number of federal programs, once again, have been taking funding cuts. And while he might have landed at a 47% in unfavorability in October of 2024, he's now at 53%, and that might not seem like a big jump, but generally Americans do not want tech billionaires calling shots or meddling in policy, period. Now, with all that said, basically Americans are feeling that Trump is focused on himself, doing what's best for himself. 53% of Americans feel that way. A lot of Americans feel like he's just bringing corruption to D.C., that whole the January 6th pardon. 48% of Americans do not like that or feel negatively about that. 44% of Americans feel negatively about the funding freeze. And my biggest takeaway from all these numbers is that even though the election results would lead one to believe that the majority of Americans feel one way, as time passes for sure, discontent is brewing across Americans, regardless of race, class, gender, socioeconomic status, or any walk of life. So yeah, we'll check back in next month. And if you feel like these numbers were helpful, please visit Navigator's Instagram and their website to see what poll information they have available to you now. Thank you.
You're not acting grateful enough. You're not being thankful. Donald Trump, the leader of Ukraine. Joining our ongoing coverage, former United States Ambassador to the United Nations, former National Security Advisor to President Obama, Ambassador Susan Rice is here. Ambassador, your reaction.
Well, Nicole, obviously it's a very sad day and an embarrassment for the United States on the world stage. But let's step back and analyze what's happened here. I think there's no question that this was a setup. You heard Donald Trump say at the end of that clip you played, this is great television. This was a setup. Volodymyr Zelensky was compelled to agree to a horrible deal that would have sent Ukraine's minerals to the United States without any concrete security guarantees. And yet, because he was trying to improve a relationship with Donald Trump, he came to Washington, he came to the Oval Office, and sat down for a meeting, hat in hand. And soon after he got there, the vice president of the United States lit into him and started a confrontation. Now, I've been in countless Oval Office meetings with heads of state, presidents and vice presidents, as national security advisor, as UN ambassador, and in other roles. I can tell you that the vice president or the secretary of state or anybody else, they don't jump in, hijack a conversation without the express blessing of the president of the United States. So J.D. Vance did that deliberately. Donald Trump knew what he was going to do. And I think, as he said at the end, because he can't, you know, help himself, this was a setup for the cameras. It was a play to his base. But above all, it was a play to Vladimir Putin, to show fealty to Vladimir Putin, and to try to humiliate Zelensky. But Zelensky didn't play along with the script, because Zelensky's got dignity and guts, and Zelensky has people that he democratically represents. And as a result, he couldn't sit there in silence as lies were being told about how the war was started, whose responsibility it was, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And he tried to explain what is in fact the case. To suggest that he was not thankful, I can't count the number of times that Zelensky has thanked the American people, the American government, the President of the United States for the critical support that we provided. It's not about gratitude. It was an effort to humiliate him, to scuttle the U.S.-Ukraine relationship so that Trump no longer feels any obligation to provide support and to hand U.S. interests and Ukraine and potentially Europe to Putin on a silver platter.
Why?
That's a great question.
Susan, we're gonna unfreeze you. I want to play some more of the president in the Oval Office if we have more of that. We're trying to Ambassador, you're unfrozen.
I hope so.
I say why, and I'll add this. Trump had so much to say about everything he and Putin had been through together. It was like a dictator's version of "We Can Do Hard Things." If you're familiar with that podcast, it was insane.
Yeah, Nicole, I think we have to understand that what happened today is really a piece of a larger puzzle. We've seen this building, frankly, since before the Trump returned to office. But literally, so much of what he has done in his first 5 weeks in office have been to the benefit of Russia and China. So let's review the bidding. You know, threatening our ally, Denmark and Greenland. You know, starting a trade war with our closest allies and partners, trying to, create a conflict with Canada and trying to pretend to relegate it to the 51st state. Vance going to Munich and basically trying to blow up the NATO alliance. Pulling the United States Agency for International Development 100% off the map and retreating. Proposing to cut 8% a year from the Department of Defense and literally dismantling the federal government and eviscerating it. That is not in any way, shape, or form in the national security interests of the United States. We are not only alone and alienated from our closest allies in Europe and Asia, as we heard from Turnbull, but worse, we have aligned ourselves completely with Russia, who is aligned with China, North Korea, and Iran. So in 5 weeks, we flipped the script, and we are dangerously isolated and cast our lot with adversaries who truly do not have our interests at heart.
I mean, Andrew Nastios, who was the head of USAID for George W. Bush, was on the program and made the argument that USAID keeps us safe from it kept us safe from another 9/11 in the years after 9/11, because by stemming catastrophe and human suffering, you also counter extremism in some of the most brutal and hostile corners of the globe. That aid isn't just philanthropic, which seems to be Donald Trump's misunderstanding of it, that aid is one of our most mighty soft power tools, not just for ending human suffering, but for keeping us safe here. Another person described this as the worst 24 hours in modern American history, that we dismantle programs to spare children from dying of malaria and measles, mumps, preventable deaths and diseases, and we dismantle the World Alliance. What is Trump's end game if you're an adversary or an ally looking at everything he's doing?
I think his end game is to undermine the security and stability of the United States. And it brings us back to the question that you asked earlier. Why? There's no other way to look at this in sum, Nicole, than to see that this is a deliberate and comprehensive weakening of the United States in very short order, from a security point of view, from an economic point of view, from a diplomatic point of view, all to the benefit of our principal adversaries, Russia primarily, and China. And so I think the sooner the American people understand what this is about, what's at stake, the clearer we can be. Now, Vladimir Putin is not popular in the United States. 80% of Americans understand him to be the vicious, cruel dictator that he is. But I'd love to hear more than one Republican in Congress stand up and say, that this is not who the United States is. This is not what we signed up for. And more importantly, this is not making America safer. It's, in fact, making us weaker and shrinking in the world. And it is going to make every American less safe.
I mean, before the Oval Office ambush, Republicans were on the record as recently as last week criticizing Putin, calling him what he is, and praising Zelensky. At least one Republican senator, I think it's Mr. Wicker, deleted a tweet today and got in line with almost the same. This is Senator Wicker, deleted a tweet highlighting the meeting with Zelensky and the bipartisan group of senators this morning, which he said went swimmingly. It went great. Zelensky was impressive and courageous and brave. And Democrats and Republicans left that meeting with high praise for Zelensky. He deleted this tweet praising Zelensky after Trump and Vance berated him in what you describe as a setup. What does that send to the world, that message?
Well, it's tragic. You know, Senator Wicker knows better. So do many of the senators on both sides of the aisle that participated in that meeting earlier.
There's that tweet up on the screen again. This was from this morning's. Republican Senator Wicker tweeted, "Today, several U.S. senators had the opportunity to meet with President Zelensky to discuss Ukraine's future and the mineral deal brokered by President Trump. This is a huge step forward in securing mutual prosperity and peace for Americans and Ukrainians." Senator Wicker tweeted that and then deleted it, Susan Rice.
And deleted it knowing better, as do so many of his Republican colleagues, as well as Democrats. And they are just kowtowing to a leader out of fear and cowardice and selling out the national interest in the process. For all this talk we've heard for decades about how strong and muscular Republicans are on national security and defense, how they stand for freedom, as Ronald Reagan did, and up for democracy, they have just folded. And they are complicit in the undermining of our national security and our national interests.
What are your worries about what happens now? Now that Putin and Vance have done this, we're at the hinge point, right? It will forever be for Ukraine what happened before that meeting and what happens after. What is the risk now for the Ukrainian people?
Well, I worry about the Ukrainian people. I worry about Europe, and I worry about the wider world. For the Ukrainian people, they have no choice but to continue to do all that they can to defend themselves. They are facing an extremely powerful and hostile aggressor who now twice has invaded their country And they're right to believe he'll do it again if given the opportunity. So they're going to have no choice except to continue to defend themselves. And one can hope that there might be some path to patching things up, but I think that's very hard to envision. I don't think Donald Trump wants that. I think he wants the outcome he got today. And that means that Europe and our other Democratic allies or erstwhile allies will need to do as much as they possibly can to continue to support Ukraine. People don't recall that Europe already has provided more, billions more in assistance to Ukraine than the United States has, economic and military. They're going to need to continue to carry the load while the United States casts its lot with Vladimir Putin.
WRC
T Pittsburgh
88.3. We are scientists in our lab, looking through the microscope. The little glass eyes, they never lie. How can this fall my coat? I've never seen anything like it before. This leader's got a mind of its own. But don't turn your back to stupid science world. This is reaching for the telephone.
Hollywood.
I want to be stereotyped. I want to be classified. Classified. We'll be right back.
don't know whether you helped over the day from the African American Wellness Project. Asthma affects 25 million people nationwide, and every day 10 people die with it, with African American women and children being most at risk. Early warning signs include coughing, especially at night, or with exercise and wheezing. Almost all asthma can be effectively managed with a good action plan. So talk with your doctor today, and for more information, visit aawellnessproject.org.
WRCT Pittsburgh, the last bastion of pulchritude.